Hey there. My name's Tim. Welcome to The Table, the podcast edition. The Table's a community that exists to make room to explore what we believe. What you're about to hear is an edited version of something that we call the Talky Bit. We're sharing it with the hope that it can be a positive catalyst and encouragement to you in your own explorations. In our experience, exploring what we believe can sometimes be hard work, and we don't think anybody should have to do that alone. We're able to offer this because of the generous support of donors both within and beyond a local community. If you want to contribute to keeping it going, you can find information about how to do that at thetablewinnipeg.com. Thanks for dropping by.
Welcome to the Talky Bit. Last time we were together and did a Talky Bit, because we didn't do one on Waffle Sunday for anyone who wasn't here. We just ate waffles and talked. And my goodness, we had to kind of turn the lights off and say, we're going to go home now, because some of us just hung around and kept talking for a long time. It was really lovely. It felt really great. Previous gathering, we were exploring this idea of the enemies of fierce compassion. And we were talking about a category of enemies of fierce compassion that we were calling the far enemies of that practice. And in other words, so we were talking about the big obvious ways of being in the world that are nothing like compassion. Things like emotional reactivity and demonizing and hostility, those were sort of some of the names that we gave to those practices. And along the way, we spent some time unpacking some of the nuances of kindness as a way of engaging with our common humanity, our kindness with one another as humans. In some ways, despite the title Nuanced Compassion, we've been exploring things that are often in such stark contrast to compassion that it's a little bit like we've been painting in black and white. The gaps have been, I think, significant in some ways. Because, you might think, for example, that it's not that hard to tell hostility from compassion, right? If you just kind of bump into the words, you go, those are nothing like the same. Even from fierce compassion? See, that raised a question, didn't it? Because part of what we've seen in these explorations is that when we get passionate about enacting compassion, the lines can get blurry. Injustice can stir up big, powerful feelings in us. It can make us angry. And that can make it easy to start to act in ways that are aimed at people rather than at injustice. And as part of our exploration around that topic, we asked ourselves this question: how can I tell if my anger is likely to be put to compassionate use or likely to cross the line into hostility? And when we were exploring that, we talked about one way to test that is to ask ourselves, am I angry at an injustice or do I feel hostile toward a person? Compassionate action, if it's compassionate, no matter how fierce, focuses on the problem and spares the person. And one of the main reasons is that motivates us to spare the person is because that's a way of acknowledging that we all have the capacity to be that person who would act in an unjust way. And that acknowledgement informs our ability to live our lives with things like humility and honesty being always in view. And those things are foundational to mindsets of practices such as kindness and compassion. So it all fits together, but not always in terribly obvious ways. But now, having acknowledged that even the far enemies can be complex, now we're going to move from the world where the contrasts are relatively obvious into a world where it can be harder to tell if what we're doing is, fierce compassion or faux compassion. And we're going to move into the near enemies. The near enemies of compassion are ways of looking at the world that can look and sound like compassion, but that actually undermine it, often in quite subtle but very real ways. And the first enemy of fierce compassion that we're going to explore is complacency. Now, a definition, just so we have some shared terrain here. Complacency can be defined as a feeling of smug or uncritical satisfaction with oneself or one's achievements. So we might consider a definition like that and think, well, no danger there. Whatever else is true about me, I'm for sure not smug. What's that you say? Saying I'm not smug? Sound a little smug? I don't like you. Go away. But let's move from smug in that definition and just think about uncritical for a moment. It's really easy to be uncritical. Just don't be critical. Now, this might be especially easy when it comes to our own ways of thinking, believing, and acting. All we have to do to be uncritical is just be okay with where we're at, with whatever positions we hold, whatever actions we take or don't take. Just be done. To put it another way, when we look at our perspective on something and think good enough, even if we can see that there's still unaddressed injustice, then we're potentially wandering into the terrain of complacency. It's that near, right? Now, it can feel like that sort of logic paints us into a pretty tight corner fairly quickly and might even be a recipe for becoming a dangerously zealous crusader for whatever perspective we hold. And yes, I chose crusader on purpose. It feels like an idea that could produce a pretty unbalanced human being in rather short order, which is where the notion of equanimity or balanced awareness comes in, both to stabilize and to potentially complicate things. Balanced awareness, which we could reasonably think of as a subset of mindfulness or a particular kind of way of approaching mindfulness, is what can keep us in the space where we're able to do complex things like separate the unjust action from the person performing the action. And when that comes to practicing fierce compassion, that's both a necessary and a good thing. We need that. The problem is that seeking to maintain balanced awareness can also rather easily lead to inaction in the face of injustice. So, in the interest of seeking a balanced perspective or understanding or a mind from which to act, we can end up thinking or saying things like, both sides are at fault. Right? That sort of feels like an extension of that, I am also capable of injustice action. And then, when we kind of have that, both sides are at fault, and then doing nothing, because that's our logic, both sides are at fault, even when it's clear that one side is harming the other. Similarly, when we're not actively working to help dismantle or withdraw our support from systems that are clearly unjust, we may be supporting them, even if it's unwittingly, by our acquiescence to those systems. I think I already mentioned that this can get pretty subtle and complex, right? This is why these things are called near enemies. And if we were going to get into this a bit more in the vernacular, we might even want to think of them sort of like frenemies, you know? I mean, it's complicated. Balance is a good thing, right? Yes, it is. Also, fierce compassion calls us to work at dismantling systems of injustice when they show up in our lives, and that's not always going to look like balance. Tension. Another component of compassion that we explored at length last time we had a talky bit on this topic was that of common humanity. Even at the level of just language, it's pretty easy to think of common humanity as something like we're all the same, we're all one. And that all one idea, the amateur philosopher in me finds that idea quite intriguing and even quite satisfactory. However, while that might be true at some ultimate or absolute or ideological level, at the level of lived experience, it doesn't work that well because we're all subject to different causes and conditions. So what is it that we ultimately have in common? Well, just to keep things interesting, if you chase that idea down a bit, you end up having to face the possibility that what we have most in common, what we have most in common is that we're all different. To put it another way, what we have in common is our humanity, hence the language of common humanity when we're talking about compassion. What we do not have in common is our lived experiences. And that's why thinking of common humanity as being equal to sameness doesn't work. It's a near enemy of compassion because at a quick glance, it could seem like those notions fully align. Thinking or saying something like, can't we just stop talking about our differences and focus instead on the fact that we're all human beings sounds pretty lovely. Very embracing, very accepting, a path forward that is much better than enmity or focusing on differences. And that might all be true. The problem is that the assumption of sameness can easily lead to disregarding or marginalizing the experiences of others. Because my experience is, in fact, not like yours. Your perspective is not like mine. Same thing when it comes to things like influences and beliefs. To approach compassion on the basis of sameness is to step away from fierce compassion. Because it undermines our motivation to have difficult conversations about our differences based on ideas like race or ethnicity or ability or gender or sexual orientation, multitude of other identities. The work of fierce compassion is the work of bringing together those who share common humanity, but who are not the same. To be clear, the emphasis on what we have in common is very important because it gives us a starting place that is shared, that is essential, and that is very powerful. But if we were the same, we quite possibly wouldn't even need something like fierce compassion because we wouldn't have to do the work of navigating our differences. But we do have to do the work of navigating our differences. And so we need compassion. And sometimes it needs to be fierce. In my lived experience, this touches on a real practical problem that we encounter in institutions broadly, but also more specifically in religion, and in particular, in certain ways here at the table. Your experience, again, may not match mine in this, but I think I can illustrate generally enough from this that there's some applicability here. The majority of the people in this community have some history with what we might broadly call church. And, as is not unusual, that experience has often included both the explicit and implicit understanding that what it means to be part of a church is to have a religious belief or a belief system in common. That's why, you know, the preacher in so many settings is always going on about what is true. That's to keep hammering home the message that we believe, as in you are part of this thing called the church, that means you believe this. To put it into the language of sameness, to be part of the church is most often understood to mean we believe the same thing. We might quibble about the details. We might even kill one another about the details. But that's because we're still convinced that having the same beliefs is non-negotiable. That's why we care enough about the quibble to, you know, get violent about it. Now, to bring that home to our experience in this community, as a community, we're very upfront about the fact that we exist to make room to explore what we believe. I've said this before, but I think it bears repeating. If you already know where you're going, you're not exploring. You might be traveling, you might even be having an adventure because you don't know all the details, but you're not, by definition, you're not exploring. Exploring takes us over the horizon. When we're exploring, we're going places we've never been. And that means, among other things, that we're having unique experiences. I was talking to somebody recently about what it feels like to face change. And this person is, I would say, an explorer by personality. They would describe themselves that way. And they get energized by facing the unknown. And the problem, and this particular person has leadership responsibilities, and so the problem is that there are people close to them who are not at all like that. The unknown makes those other folks, not similarly natured, nervous and anxious, even terrified and immobilized. Same changes, very different experiences. All to say, a community that exists to explore belief is not going to be everybody's cup of tea. And it's also not going to be what most people think of when they imagine church. But, and here's the problem, or at least one version of the problem. Lots of people come to the table, at least initially, expecting sort of a slightly more open version of what they grow up with. Kind of, you know, a church with a little more room to breathe, or a church that's okay with queer folks, or insert contentious issue here. But in the end, still a place where there's dogma lurking in the background. And then they start exploring and perhaps discover that, personally, they don't have much left of what they used to believe. Not an unusual story in our setting. Here's where the problem kicks in. Far too often, people having that experience also assume that this discovery now means that they can't be part of the community because they don't have some belief X still intact. And so they leave. I am not talking about anyone in particular. This narrative is a composite of many experiences and conversations I've had over the past decade plus in our setting. It's also another version of the difference between sameness and common humanity. It's the difference between continuing to explore when you hit the horizon of what you thought you were exploring and realize there's still room to keep going and that you don't have to leave the community to do that, and believing that coming to the end of what you thought of as belief means you have to leave a community because somebody else taught you that that's how it works. Yes, there are communities where that's how it works. Sometimes in the pragmatic realities of community, that even needs to be how it works. but it's not a good match for the frame for this community. Alternatively, the opportunity is there to stick around and have the challenging conversations, to get past the boundaries of that notion of sameness in a community setting and move into the space where it's compassion that compels us to continue as people who have humanity in common, to continue to have challenging conversations about our differences and to have them as a community, to have them with people with whom we hold community. It's showing up for relational connection with people whom we know believe something different than we do, and who may even find things believable that we do not. It's getting past sameness so we can stand together in the shared space of our common humanity and have interesting, courageous conversations about our differences. I'm tempted to say something like, damn it, stop thinking about the table as a church. Because of what the language of church carries with it for so many of us. And for some of us, that's exactly what we need to do. For others, that would be the exact wrong thing to do. Collectively, we have agreed that we have a desire to explore what we believe, and we have that in common, and that's lovely. It does not mean that we all see or experience the context for that as the same thing. That is not implicit in that statement. Well, as is often the case, that was a bit of a meandering journey. A good friend of ours recently listened to a particular Talkie Bit podcast and described it as a bit of a pretzel. They did go on to say, but when you landed it, it was good, which was very, very kind of them. And I mean, when they described it as a bit of a pretzel, I thought, oh yeah, guilty as charged. My hope remains that at least some particular bend in that pretzel was a place where you, you know, caught a glimpse of both our common humanity and our unique experience of it, and had the feeling that the table is a place where there is room for both. I believe that's possible. I do not believe it is simple. I believe it's desirable, but my experience tells me that it's also likely to be complex and challenging. There are many ways we could make this community simpler, but I don't know that they would be ways in which we were making it better. So that's a space to consider. We are and remain committed to making room to explore what we believe. Not so we can all be the same, but so that we can all know and be grateful that our differences don't need to take us away from our common humanity, but can take us deeper into it. All right. Peace.